Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sarah Posner, who is the senior editor at Religion Dispatches and author of God's Prophets, that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values. Her work has appeared in The American Prospect, The Nation, Salon, The Washington Spectator, and the religion blogs at The Washington Post and The UK Guardian. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Posner.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And there is, of course, just a post-mortem in terms of the Republican primary in Michigan and Arizona, particularly in Michigan, where Rick Santorum, according to the punditry, put his foot in his mouth. Not that Romney hasn't done that, but but in particular, by bringing up the Christian right social issues, particular homeschooling or and contraception, his opposition to contraception, lambasting President John Kennedy over his First Amendment attitude, to which Santorum objected so much that he said he wanted to throw up. So all of that was a little bizarre. A lot of people are saying, well, he's blown it. He'll never make it in a national campaign. He might appeal to the right wing Christian right voters in the Republican primary, but on a national campaign, this is not going to work. But on the other hand, the agenda that he's talking about seems to be working across the country. In Virginia, they've just passed onerous restrictions on a woman's right to choose and forcing medical procedures on women that they don't want. They're about to do that in Alabama. So give us a sense of what's going on here. On the one hand, we're told that Santorum is not going to make it on the national stage, yet his agenda is making it throughout the states.
Right. Well, even though a presidential candidate at the national level might not be able to garner enough votes to win an election running on that kind of agenda, nonetheless, at the state level, conservatives have had success in populating state legislatures, enabling them to pass these restrictive bills on abortion issues and even on contraception, you know, with banning family planning funding and from the state and so on. What's happening in Virginia and Alabama right now is actually part of a trend that has been going on across the country over the past 2 or 3 years. There are several other states that have passed these ultrasound laws, even ones that don't explicitly require the transvaginal probe, but may implicitly require that just because of the time of gestation to even do an effective ultrasound, you'd have to do that. And Texas has such a law, and it was challenged in court, and the Fifth Circuit upheld it as constitutional. This is part of a trend nationwide. There were, I guess, just a sequence of events that led to the outrage in Virginia, that led to the legislature stripping the part about the transvaginal probe requirement. But nonetheless, the bill still passed in its form requiring an ultrasound in the first place.
Well, all of these things are so transparently designed to humiliate women who are about to have an abortion.
Without the transvaginal probe, obviously, right? So it's meant to humiliate women and also to indicate to them that they're being punished for something. So, for example, in Texas, where there is an ultrasound law in place, that law was an amendment to a 2003 law called a right-to-know law, and these are pretty common. They've been passed in a number of states across the country, too. And these laws require the doctor to inform, quote-unquote, a woman seeking an abortion of possible negative consequences of having an abortion. Now, many of these things have been disproved by medical evidence, such as the increased risk of breast cancer, depression, anxiety, and so on and so forth from having an abortion. Nonetheless, it's codified in the law that the doctor has to tell the woman all of these things before she can have an abortion. So in Texas, the ultrasound piece of it was kind of like an add-on to that already humiliating, degrading requirement that you have to be lectured about these possible consequences, which haven't even been medically proven, and in some cases have been medically disproven.
Again, I'm speaking with Sarah Posner, who is senior editor at Religion Dispatches and author of God's Prophets, that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values. Her work has appeared in The American Prospect, The Nation, Salon, The Washington Spectator, and the religion blogs at The Washington Post and the UK's Guardian. The other aspect of this kind of return to, you wrote an article recently at Religion Dispatches about the Republicans' return to the Dark Ages, and it, in many ways, for a lot of women, I think it feels like a return to the Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. They thought that they had contraception was no longer an issue that was fought out in the 20s and 30s. Tomorrow in the United States Senate, they will be voting on legislation proposed by Senator Roy Blunt that would allow employers to deny coverage for health care services that are considered morally objectionable, and those mm-hmm. include mm-hmm. Contraception. The battle continues. I mean, and again, I'm sort of perplexed that we're told that Santorum's fundamentalism is not going to play on the national stage, but yet the United States Senate is voting on his agenda.
Well, on the House side of the Congress, yesterday there was yet another hearing, this time held by the House Judiciary Committee, framing the contraception coverage requirement as a battle between, you know, executive overreach, the overreach of the Obama administration, and religious freedom, portraying it as an infringement of religious freedom. And it was not as lopsided as the hearings that the Oversight Committee held a few weeks ago that notoriously didn't have any women on the panels. This time the Republicans took care to populate the panel with women. Women who were opposed to a contraception mandate, by the way. But they did allow the Democrats to call a witness, and this was a public health witness who was on the Institute of Medicine committee that recommended the contraception coverage requirement in the first place. Nonetheless, I mean, the Republicans control the House of Representatives. They have, down the line, taken up this issue as one of an infringement of religious freedom. Even Republicans who aren't Catholic, even Republicans who don't share the Catholic Church's opposition to birth control. So yesterday you had this spectacle in a congressional hearing room of Daryl Issa, who's not Catholic himself, putting the Humanae Vitae, the 1968 papal encyclical that banned the use of, said that the use of birth control was contrary to Catholic teaching, into the congressional record. So they've really taken up this cause. They don't have the majority in the Senate, and it's unclear whether the overbroad Blunt amendment will pass, but this is indicative of how far they're willing to stretch this religious freedom argument. It started as, well, we don't want Catholic hospitals and universities to have to provide this coverage, even though the original regulation exempted churches themselves from having to provide this coverage. And so then when Obama made this accommodation, that still wasn't good enough. And then they started making arguments, well, yes, well, originally we said we were concerned about Catholic hospitals and universities having to provide this coverage, but now we're concerned about the owner of a Taco Bell franchise who has a moral objection to this coverage, and what about him? And so they kept changing the parameters and changing the goalposts so that now you have the Blunt Amendment, which would basically allow, if it passed, allow any kind of employer to raise a religious conscience objection to not just the contraception coverage, but other coverage. You know, maybe they might not want to cover HIV drugs or something of that nature. So the Blunt Amendment is incredibly overbroad, and not only would permit an employer to not cover a wide array of medical care, but it also expands the idea of religious conscience objection far beyond what's ever been acknowledged or held by the Supreme Court or any other court in this country.
Well, but Sarah Posner, isn't there, they're using religiosity as an excuse for putting through this kind of reactionary agenda, and in terms of the anti-abortion requirements that have come that have been voted into law in Virginia and about to be voted into law in Alabama. And by the way, we didn't mention that Oklahoma the state of Oklahoma has pretty much passed its personhood amendment. That'll be signed by the governor soon. Mm-hmm. The Senate voted 34-8 in favor, and it's just a question of the Republican governor signing it into law. That'll be the first state in the country to enact a personhood bill. But just to touch on what seems to be the real motive here is in the case of these ultrasound bills are to humiliate women who need an abortion and want to have an abortion. And the way that they do it is not just the forced humiliation of having to be lectured to and look at ultrasound, but they have to pay for it. That's the key. It's to, right. In Roy Blunt's bill, what's going to happen is all of these companies that are going to be exempted now from basic health care provisions will mean that in terms of just contraception, which is what they're focusing on, women pay average in this country about $15 to $50 a month for contraception,
right.
Even with insurance, that is.
Right.
But if the Blunt bill passes the Senate, it could go up to $600 a year. We know American families are struggling, to pay their bills in any case. Isn't
right.
that the agenda here? I mean, if they're using moralism as a way to punish women at the pocketbook.
Well, you know, they're claiming that it violates someone else's religious freedom if you are using they're saying that it violates the employer's religious freedom, or the CEO's even religious freedom, if they're forced to pay for your birth control or pay for coverage, insurance coverage. They don't have
didn't Obama exempt these religious organizations from that
is on the insurance company. And again,
right.
like I said, they changed the goalposts. They made it seem like, well, no, it's not just that. Like some employers self-insure, which means that they don't go through an insurance company. They provide the insurance directly to their employees, and so that wasn't acceptable. And they also made arguments about just sort of being in any way involved with an insurer who provides that kind of coverage. But, yeah, I mean, like, obviously, if you're going to make these attenuated, strained arguments about if you contract with an insurance carrier who provides this kind of coverage to women, that somehow tramples on your religious freedom, it really exposes what's underneath your argument, that it's really about you really don't want women to have birth control because, you know, otherwise why do you care about this so much? Like, why is it so important to you to not, you know, have any kind of connection at all to the insurance carrier who provides this coverage?
But isn't this the same kind of hypocrisy that is behind this idea on the part of the Christian right, who honestly believe they're some kind of beleaguered minority in this country that are repressed, the Shia
minority, but they're not beleaguered.
Yeah, yeah, that are, like the Shia are in Pakistan. The Santorums of this world keep talking about the First Amendment's freedom of religion. But what he talks about really makes me think that we need freedom from religion. And it's exactly the same in this case, where they're talking about the need for moral exemptions from institutions that take their morality seriously, and somehow the government is forcing them to break their own moral standards. But the price that you pay for that is that everybody is denied. I mean, in other words, you know, they can be right. exempted, but
right.
they don't want to be exempted. They want to deny everybody else.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of their argumentative rhetorical tactics is to kind of turn church-state separation on its head. So church-state separation is there so that the government does not, endorse or appear to endorse a particular religion, a particular faith, a particular religious line of thinking on a policy matter. The argument that they're making here is that the insurance mandate for the contraception coverage is a violation of church-state separation because the government is interfering in the affairs of the church. Now, of course, that would be a constitutional violation if it was true that the government was meddling in the affairs of the church. I mean, the government can't tell the church, you know, what to believe. You know, we don't have a state-run religion here. But the idea that a generally applicable law, which is based on a need, a compelling interest that the government has in keeping the population healthy and alive, is somehow the government telling the church what to do, is just such a stretch. But the other, you know, sort of financial actuarial point to make is that contraception is more cost effective than not providing it, because the costs, even if you weren't to make an argument about women's autonomy or women's reproductive freedom, you know, this is from a cost benefit analysis, you know, this is much from the insurance company standpoint, it's much cheaper to provide the coverage for the contraception rather than to pay for the coverage for an unintended pregnancy. So, you know, it sort of seems like the insurance companies, although they are complaining about it, probably, you know, shouldn't.
Well, Sarah, I thank you so much for joining us and for filling us in on the ever-changing goalposts here in these culture wars that never seem to be over. Women in this country think that they have a moment to rest on their successes and victories, but that's not the case. They're going to be perpetually on the defensive until... I mean, just in closing, do you think it'd be a good idea for Santorum to be the nominee and for the country to really have a referendum on the real power of the incipient theocratic movement in this country and the religious right? Because my feeling is that if there were such a national referendum, if he were the candidate, we may find out that the religious right's bark is worse than their bite.
Or we might find out the opposite.
Oh, well, then it's not worth taking the chance then. thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Ian. Bye.
Bye. Again, I've been speaking with Sarah Posner, the editor-in-chief of Religion Dispatches and the author of God's Prophets, that's Profits, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values. Her work has appeared in the American Prospect, The Nation, Salon, The Washington Spectator, and the religion blogs at The Washington Post and the UK's Guardian. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the nukes for food deal with North Korea.
Don't know nothing about myself.